this morning. It is, it's just exciting to get to introduce to you our preacher for this morning. He is one of us, lover of Chapel Hill. So, Justin Wright, if you want to come on down, Justin, we'll do this introduction here. Justin was one of the first people that Matt and I met when we moved here 4 years ago. Met him as a pastor, founding pastor of Campus Crossroads, a church here in Chapel Hill, and has been one of the biggest supports and encouragers for us as we've been a part of Love Chapel Hill. And so as a pastor and just during that time, Justin also started a company called Purpose 51, which is a t-shirt printing company that gives away 51% of its profits to charitable organizations. So just a really cool heart. Justin just has a heart for compassion and for this town, and we are honored to have he and his family a part of this church and excited to have you bring the word this morning. So, Justin, lead us, buddy.
I appreciate it. A little known fact is that when we were getting started, probably 13 years ago or so, we were putting together a board of directors or an advisory board, and Matt's father was actually on that board, and so I didn't know Matt at the time, and so when I met Matt years later, we started putting two and two together and realized that I knew his dad. So it's a small world. We are excited about being here and being part of Love Chapel Hill now. And anyway, Matt asked me to share this morning, and I want to tell a story, and I don't know if we have the first picture to come up. And how many of you like mangoes? It's hard to see out here. All right. Well, I don't like mangoes. The only thing I like about mangoes is that one saved my life. And so I want to tell you the story about how one saved my life. It's been a few years ago. We went on a mission trip to Haiti. And a friend of mine, James, who was a former student, part of our church, he's one of these people that I am not like. He's the kind of guy that wakes up in the morning and he's excited about getting on his bike and riding 20 miles or going for a 10-mile jog. He's just one of those kind of guys, and he's always excited about doing those types of things, so he's a real adventurous type. And so he had been to Haiti on several mission trips, and he kept on and on and on, "Hey, Justin, man, you got to go. We got to go down there." And so he, myself, and two other guys that were in our ministry, Graham and Jonathan, we head down to Haiti to Mission of Hope. It's a really cool mission organization down in Haiti, and we're having a good time. And you know, it's a whole different world. I mean, it's like you've stepped onto into a different world there. And so, the first day we're there, where the mission is located is right on the bay across from Port-au-Prince, and it's not right on the ocean. It's a little removed. And behind it, there are these mountains. And there's these little mountains, and then there's this big, humongous mountain behind it. And James, the first day, he looks up there and he says, "Hey, Justin, I really want to climb that mountain." And I was like, "Man, you're crazy. I mean, that's a long way off. And we're in Haiti, in case you forgot, you know." And so we're looking up there, and he says, "You see that tree on top of it?" Because in Haiti, it's been deforested. So if you know anything about it, a lot of it is just barren. It's almost like a desert with shrubbery and stuff. So there's not very many trees, especially where we were. And you're looking up this mountain, and there's a little tiny tree on top of it. And I said, "You sure that's a tree?" He's like, "Yeah." He said, "That's a tree." He said, "I want to go up there, and I want you to take my picture in that tree." I was like, "Dude, that's stupid. You know, I mean, what are you talking about?" He's like, "I want to do it." He said, "Every time I come, I can never get anybody to go with me." And so every day, he's just on and on about climbing this mountain. And so finally, after about 3 days, he convinced us to go. But the problem was, the mission had never let anybody go do this because we were like in a compound with guards with shotguns. I mean, it's dangerous in Haiti. And so they didn't really want to let us go, you know, up a mountain by ourselves, and so we had to come up with a plan. There's these people that in Haiti, they live in shupas, which are these little lean-to made out of sticks, and you'll just see them just randomly out in these fields, and they'll have like a little farm, might even be as big as this room, and they'll live in these little huts, basically. And so we come up with a way to spiritualize our journey to the top of this mountain. So we go and we say, what we'll do is we'll get backpacks and we'll fill them with candy and shoes and a couple tents, and we'll, on our way up, we'll minister to the people in the shoes. So we convinced the mission to let us go with our spiritual ambition now. And so we get ready, and I don't know what we were thinking. We weren't thinking at all. It was middle of the summer. It was about 105 degrees. And we start preparing, and we all got backpacks, and we decide to get 2 bottles of water each. Let me just say, that's not enough to climb these mountains. So we get 2 water bottles, just regular size water bottles. And then I thought, you know, we ought to take like an extra reserve just in case something goes wrong, because you can't call 911 in Haiti. So we got 2 reserve bottles, and I was in charge of one of the reserve bottles. And so we take off. We're all excited. We've got a loaf of bread and some peanut butter and jelly for our lunch along the way, because we knew it was going to take a long time. And we take off, and we go to the first little shupa, and there's an old farmer there, and he's so nice. We're talking to him. We're like, this is going to be a cool adventure. And the guy says, so what are y'all doing? Well, we pointed up at the mountain and said, we're going to the top of that mountain. He said, oh, that's way too dangerous. Y'all don't need to go up that mountain. And we're like, oh, we're young. We'll be fine. And he goes, no. He goes, that's way too dangerous. You do not need to go to the top of that mountain. Did we listen? No, we didn't listen to this man who had lived at the foot of that mountain his whole life and said, this is a dangerous mountain. No, we didn't listen at all. So we take off, and we're going up, and sure enough, we're finding, you know, I think we found like four little shupas on the way. But eventually, we got over the first hill and then the bigger mountain, and on the other side of that, there's this little oasis. It was this dirty lake and these trees, and so we sat down, we had our lunch, and we were pretty tired by then. And I'm looking at this big mountain and thinking, uh-oh, you know, I'm pretty tired at this point. But James, who's the, you know, adventurous type, let's go, you know, we're ready to go. And we had 2 Haitian guides with us, and so it was us 4 guys, 2 Haitian guides, and 2 other girls. And so we start heading up the mountain, and James and the Haitians are like gazelles going up this mountain, and the rest of us are like this donkey pack, you know, just barely making our way up through there. And so by the time we get up there, and it's like there's the main peak with the tree, and then there's a smaller peak about 100, 150 yards before you get to it. And so I remember I was one of the last ones to make it up there. And when I get up there, everybody, you can go to the next picture, actually. This is our way up. But you can see way off in the distance in the corner, that's the mission, and we're not even at the top yet. So you can see how far away it was, and we still had a long ways to go. But I make it up there, and everybody is literally laid on their back underneath these briar bushes because there's no trees, and everybody's just like completely covered in sweat. And I sit down, and we're all exhausted, and thank God we had some mangoes. And that was the first picture, and I was so happy, and I had mango all over me in my beard. I just didn't care at that point. I was just thankful to have this mango, even though I didn't like it. And so we eat our mangoes, we got a little bit of a sugar rush, and we're like, okay, we can make the rest of the way. And so we go up this mountain, and as we get to the peak of it, we're in for the surprise of our lives. We walk up, and all of a sudden, we're like looking at these kids. There are kids on top of this peak of this mountain. And we were like aliens had landed there, and you know, we're all just staring at one another, don't know what to do. And they go running back to their parents, and there's this huge shupa, like a big one, biggest one we saw up there. And there's 3 generations of family living on top of this mountain. And we have a picture of that. And so we discover this family. And the guy's talking to us, and he said, I've lived up here for 20 years. And y'all are the first non-Haitians to ever visit. So that was really cool that we had kind of discovered these people on top of the mountain. You know, we thought, wow, you know, we've got candy for the kids. And so, you know, we're giving candy to the kids, and I had some shoes and different things, and we hang out with them for a little bit. But here's the thing. It had taken us hours and hours and hours to get up here. I don't know what time. It was mid to late afternoon by the time we made it there. And I'm thinking, we've got to get back. And so we were all kind of in a panic, so we didn't stay long. So we start to leave, and I'm asking everybody about water, and everybody's out of water. I'm like, you're kidding me. You're out of water. And so they had already drank the reserve bottle, too, and I had the other reserve. So I'm doling out this other reserve water between, you know, all these people, and I'm thinking, this is going to be bad. And so we take off down the hill. Of course, James and the two Haitians, they're just like, gone. Just leave us. And the rest of us are just kind of inching our way down these mountains. And it was pretty rough. We were really hot and sweaty. And then about halfway down is when it really got scary, because I stopped sweating. And then I started like getting chills. And I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm dehydrated. And I was the only one that had any water left. And so I started sipping on my water, and I'm really starting to get panicked a little bit, because there's no 911 call, and if you did call 911, nobody would come. I mean, it was just, you're on your own. And so we're going through there, and everybody had left. Like, it's kind of like, it got to a point where it was like every man for themselves. And so everybody was just trying to get back. And so it was my friend Graham, myself, and this girl who was 18 years old, skinny as a rail. Her name was Star, and she was right in front of me, and all of a sudden she goes, boom, she hits the ground. And I'm like, oh my God. And I like jumped down, and there was no trees, no shade. There's like a briar bush over the side. So we drag her over underneath that. I was scared. She kind of comes to, and I said, Star, do you have any water? I said, Graham, do you have any water? No. And I pull out my water. I had like this much left. I said, here, Star, drink my water. And I was scared, because I'm thinking, okay, we're all in bad shape here. And so we finally, after about 10 or 15 minutes, we worked our way methodically back, and we made it. And I was so mad at James for taking us on this trip that almost killed us, so that he could get his picture in a tree. I think that might even be the next one. So there's the picture of James in that stupid tree. And I was so mad at him, but now we laugh about it. But I tell that story, and I like to tell stories, because most people don't remember what you say, but they'll remember a story. I think that's why Jesus spoke in parables so much, is because, you know, a few weeks from now, you'll probably not remember a thing I said, but you'll remember that story, and those stories stick with you. And so that's one of the reasons I wanted to share that and just really relate it to what I want to talk about in Proverbs. And instead of focusing on one verse, what I wanted to focus on is just our goals. And it's like a mountain. I mean, our goal was to get to the top of the mountain. And if you think about that in life, that's what goals are, right? It's just a mountain. Or a molehill sometimes. It might be small goals. It might be medium-sized goals. It might be huge, long-range goals that seem like a Mount Everest to you. But they're all mountains in a way. And I want to read Proverbs 16:9. It says, in his heart a man plans his course, but the Lord determines his steps. So the bottom line is, we all have goals. You know, I don't care who you are. I don't care what stage of life you're in. If you could write them down or you could think about them, we all have them. So how do we achieve them? And, you know, I was looking through, and there's so much to learn in Proverbs. I love Proverbs. And this is certainly not an exhaustive list. But I wanted to kind of walk through the proper way to reach that mountain, to reach that goal. And the first one, the first thing, most important thing in my opinion, are our motives. Now, our goal is to reach the top of the mountain. But what was our motive? Anybody? So that
your friend got in the tree.
so that my friend could get his picture in the tree. Now, is that a great motive? For him, it was, maybe. But, you know, I mean, that was a stupid motive. I mean, what in the heck? You know, you're going to put people's lives in danger so that you can get your picture in a tree on top of a mountain. In Haiti. There you go. I mean, it's just, it was dumb. You know, if you think about it, it's like, how did Justin die? Well, he was climbing a mountain so that James could get his picture in a tree. Well, he wasn't like doing something special, no. He was doing something dumb. You know, you'd never want to die doing something dumb, right? And so, anyway, the crazy thing about it all is this, is that we had this dumb idea, this dumb motive, and what did we do? We came up with a plan to spiritualize it, right? We said, we've got a dumb motive. How can we make everybody think it's okay? How can we feel good about it ourselves? We're going to spiritualize it. And so we're like, we're going to help all these people along the way. Think about that in life. How many people do that, and how many times you do it, and I do it. We come up with these plans and these things that we want to do, and we say, you know, that might not be the best motive, but I can spiritualize that. You know, God, if you really, we've all prayed these type of prayers. God, if you help me get there, I promise I will do this, or I'll help these people, and, you know, when I get there, I'll have enough money to help these people and to do this and do that. And we start justifying our bad motives by spiritualizing them. And we're all guilty of those types of things. Now, I want to read 21:2. Proverbs 21:2 says, all a man's ways seem right to him, but the Lord weighs the heart. And then chapter 20, verse 23 says, the Lord detests differing weights, and dishonest scales do not please him. So, when I was a kid, my mom drugged me to antique, you know, places and shops and garage sales. I mean, every Saturday morning we were up at 6 a.m. She was that type of person. She still is. It did give me an appreciation for antiques. I love antiques even to this day because my mom did that, and she has beautiful antiques in her house. But one of the coolest things she ever got, and unfortunately she sold it years later, but when I was a kid, she had real scales. See, when you read this verse, I think in our society, we think of what we weigh on in the bathroom every morning, but that's not what he's talking about. He's talking about real scales. And we had this set of real scales. It was the coolest thing. It had two plates on each side, and there was these weights, and they were kind of stacked on one another, and they got smaller like a cone. And I played with them. So I weighed everything in the house as a kid. You know, I would put it on there, and I was weighing everything. And so when I read this verse, it's like in my mind, I immediately see that, and that's the kind of scale they're talking about, of course, is this type of scale. Now, the second verse said, the Lord detests differing weights and dishonest scales. So back in the day, and they probably still people do it now, is you have mislabeled weights, and so it's to the advantage of the person weighing them. And the Lord hates that. So you look at this and you say, how can my motives be good? Well, it's just like that scale. You put what you know about God and who He is and His motivations and what you read in the Word, what you learn, you place that on one side of the scale. That's the weight that you need to balance. And then you put your motive and your goals and your plans on the other side. And you start to see, is that going to balance out? And we all can do this. We all can start to say, all right, God, test my motives. God, look at my motives and see if they are pure about what I want to do. Or, you know, God gives us all talents and abilities and gifts in our lives, and He wants us to use them. But He wants us to use them with the right motives. And that's the key, is we put that on that scale and the Lord weighs those. And we want to have good motives. And that's the key to accomplishing your goals. Second thing is wise counsel. Now, did we seek wise counsel when we went on our little mountain adventure? Not at all. We made up our mind first And then we tried to convince people to let us go. Anybody besides me guilty of doing stuff like that? I mean, I've done it so many times in my life. I just make a decision. I'm like, this is what I want to do. Now I've got to convince my wife or my parents or whoever that this is the reason why I can make this spiritual enough to do it. But the thing is, I think it's one of the most overlooked things is that we need wise counsel in our lives. Chapter 19, verse 20 says, "Listen to advice and accept instruction, and in the end you will be wise." Chapter 15, 22 says, "Plans fail for lack of counsel, but with many advisors they succeed." Do you know why we didn't want advice? I mean, so many times in our lives we don't want advice. And it's because we are afraid of the answers people will tell us. We are afraid that people will tell us, that's a stupid idea, or that's not a good idea, or that's too dangerous, or you need to do this and this and this first. And, you know, we are afraid of what people might say. Usually that's the first indicator that you're probably making some mistakes. And the thing is, and I've learned this over the years, because this is an area you have to be a little careful in. You have to have wise people giving you counsel. Because if you got a bunch of people around you that have ulterior motives, then are you going to get good counsel? No, not at all. You're just going to have a bunch of opinions. And so what I'm talking about is finding a few people that are older, that are wiser than you, people that you can trust. And when you have issues or plans or goals, run them by people. Sit down with them. And I've done this so many times. I've sat down with ideas and goals, and I have three guys with three different opinions. Does that make it just all crazy and I shouldn't do it? No. What it does is it gives me a broad range of information in order to make a better decision. Because one might say no, one might say, yeah, you ought to do it. And I have to ultimately make that decision based on, first, are my motives pure? And second, gathering the information that I need from different perspectives. Because we get tunnel vision about what we want to do, and we don't see the dangers and the pitfalls that we might run into along the way, whereas they can. And the third thing is preparation and timing. Now, did we prepare well for our trip? We thought we were, but we didn't. I mean, it was just crazy for us to head up this mountain in 105 degree heat in the middle of the summer with no shade and not enough supplies. It was just not a good idea. We didn't prepare well. We didn't think it through. And the timing was off. Chapter 24, 27 says, I just discovered this verse and it's just really impacted me. It says, "Finish your outdoor work and get your fields ready. After that, build your house." And then chapter 19, 2 says, "It is not good to have zeal without knowledge, nor to be hasty and miss the way." Have you ever been in a hurry in the car and you're driving along because you're hasty, and all of a sudden you realize, shoot, I've missed my exit, or I've missed my road, and now you're really going to be late because you've got to figure out how to turn around or go a different way? And that verse really speaks to that, is don't be hasty about what you're going to do in life. You don't have to be in a hurry about it. You need to prepare, and you need to do the right thing. But going back to that first verse, it says, "Finish your outdoor work and get your fields ready. After that, build your house." We live in a society that says, all right, I will live in Chapel Hill. All right? Whatever my motive might be, good or bad. And I go, and my first thing is to just buy a house. And I'm going to go to the bank, and I'm going to figure out what's the maximum I can pay for, and I'm going to buy a house. And we buy that house, and then we realize this is going to be difficult. I've got to figure out how to support all this. Isn't that the American way, right? That's the way we do things in America, is we go and buy all we want and then figure out a way to pay for it. And we do that with our plans. We get there, and then we figure out how to stay there. But this verse says the very opposite. If you think about back in the old days when people were going out west, you know, they would go and they would have their carriages, and they would find a plot of land, and they would see if it was good land, and they would get their fields ready, and they would maybe build a temporary structure, and they would make sure that this is going to be a good place to live, and then they would build their house. And that's a smart way to approach anything, is that timing, and saying, God, what is the timing in what I do, and I need to prepare myself. We don't just show up with a white coat on and say, call me doctor. No, you got to go through many years of preparation and schooling and all these types of things and learning in order to be there. And we need to look at everything in life that way and say, what kind of preparation, what kind of timing do I need to have in order to achieve the goals that God has for me? And then lastly, perseverance. This is the only thing that we had and did right on this trip, I think, is perseverance, because I'm standing here today telling you about it. And we did have perseverance. Chapter 14, verse 23 says, all hard work leads to profit, but mere talk leads only to poverty. I hate laziness. And I hate when I'm lazy. I'm one of these people that even when I take a day off, it's hard for me to relax. You know, maybe I was taught that early on. I grew up on a farm, and I remember somebody, a spiritual person, told my dad one time, because we lived on a farm, and he was talking about working on Sunday, and the guy was like, well, you know, you're not supposed to work on Sunday. And my dad said, well, last time I checked, my cows still have to eat on Sunday. So he would get up at 5 a.m. on Sunday morning, and he would go out and work on the farm. And he would be back at 7 or 8 before we even got up to go to church. And he would be in there drinking coffee and fixing breakfast. And he was not a lazy man. And, you know, I think about that and I want to be that way myself. I want to press on and persevere. Because the bottom line is that, you know, you go through that list. All right, I've got my goal. Do I have good motive? Check. Okay, I feel like I've got good motives. Have I sought wise counsel? Check. Have I made the proper preparation and the timing? Check. Then go for it. Don't let anything stop you. If you have all these right motivations to do it, press on, persevere, because the bottom line is, and anybody can tell you that's been down the road, the road of life is hard, and you're going to run into very difficult situations and very difficult things. And the thing is that if you're climbing a mountain just to get your picture made at the top, if it gets rough, you're probably going to turn around and go back. But if your motive is to do something great up there, then what are you going to do? You're going to press on and you're going to push through and you're going to do something great with your life. So perseverance is everything. But bad motives, not listening to wise counsel, lack of preparation, almost got us killed on that mountain. I made the summit, but it's funny. We look through our pictures. I don't have any pictures of the view. I noticed that later on. I'm like, we did look, and I vaguely kind of remember it just being beautiful and breathtaking. But it's like, I was in such a panic and so tired by the time I made it to the summit. That I didn't even enjoy it. That's what America's all about, right? You see people, you know, that have it all, that have the big house, the money, the cars, and everything, and they're depressed, and they're, committed suicide. And us peons, we're like, if I had all that, I'd be happy. Why are they not happy? Because they got to that summit, and they're so worn out and tired from going there on the wrong motives that they can't enjoy it, that they don't see what they have. And the thing is, we went up there, and it was funny because when we first came back, we were like, that was cool that we got to see this family on top. Man, we gave them some shoes. Those kids didn't have shoes. We gave them some candy. They were real happy about, 2 seconds until that was gone. You know, and so we're just thinking about how much good we gave this family. But the more I thought about it since that trip, I see something different. That family helped me. They helped me realize what was really important. Their motive was living on top of that mountain. At some point, that man said to his wife, "Hey, do you want to go live on top of that mountain?" It might have been a crazy idea, and everybody was saying, "That's crazy, you're going to be far away from everybody." But he's like, "No, we can do this." And he did. He lived there for 20 years. As far as I know, he's still on top of that mountain. And this is the thing that I want you to leave with today. And I think, for me, this is powerful. That a hut built of sticks sits on a $1 million property with a $1 million view. People pay millions for this view. And a stick hut sits on top of it. And they were the absolutely richest family I've ever seen. Because their motives were right. Let's pray. Lord, thank you so much for discovering that family on top of that mountain. Thank you so much for the impact that they've had on me these years. And God, I pray, Lord, that as we look at their example, Lord, that we would weigh our motives. God, that whatever our plans and goals are, you want us to have those things, but you want us to be have them in proper perspective with the proper motives. And I pray that we would all be challenged to weigh those motives. God, I pray that you would place people or let us be intentional about finding people that we can go to for wise counsel. God, that you would just use them to really minister into our lives and help us to be that to other people. God, let us wait on you and your timing. And let us persevere to see your kingdom grow, to know your kingdom in the way it should be. In Jesus' name, amen.